Next case on our docket is In Re Marriage of Field 5-24-0405 and 0593. Appellant, if you are ready, you may proceed, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Your Honors.
My name is Dennis Field. I'm an attorney licensed to practice here in the state of Illinois, and I'm also a pro se litigant in this matter. The issues before this court, first, there's many issues before this court. The first issue is whether or not the trial court erred as a matter of law by allowing Della to proceed to trial on a claim for additional child support for tax years 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020, 2021, 2022, when her only pleading regarding the additional child support is for the year 2016. Her only claim and her prayer for recovery is for 2016. And that petition was never amended at any time. You know, the real issue before this court, and I feel, is that whether or not by the marital settlement agreement, because we're dealing with a contract case here. And that's what marital settlement agreement. And whether by the marital settlement agreement I gave up my right to self-determination. That's what the issue is. You know, so what we have to do, we have to look at the contract, Your Honor, and it says, on September 30th, 2013, we entered into the contract. It was a negotiated contract. And it says, husband shall pay base amount of child support in the amount of $1,300 retroactive to January 2013. In addition, husband shall pay 28% of any other income received by payment of loans to shareholders, wages, bonuses, dividends, or income from any other source. And that's very important. It was any other source. Now, there's nothing in the agreement that says I have to remain a partner. Nothing in the agreement. I had to even stay as an attorney. I was 58 years old when this was entered into. I was a year and a half away from being able to start taking my retirement. And the facts were, at 62, I decided to take my retirement. On August 17th, 2017, Della filed a motion for additional child support. And she stated, in particular, additional child support against Dennis for the tax year 2016. And she attached calculations for that year. And she asked for interest, starting from past due interest, even though the MSA does not provide for interest on additional child support. This is not back child support. This is not back child support or past due child support. This is additional child support. I'd already paid the $1,300 per month, or the total would have been $15,600 a year.
Okay. May I ask you a question, sir?
Yes, sir.
You raise the issue that the years 2017 through 2022 were not properly included in the pleadings.
In any pleadings, that's correct, Your Honor.
Didn't you later agree with the trial court on the record that the proper time periods to be considered were 2016 to 2022?
You know what had happened, the case had been continued, and she asked me what was set. And I said, yeah, that's right, you did set that, Your Honor. I didn't say that was properly before the court. I just said, she asked me what had she set. I didn't waive any objection to, or my prior objection to it at any point in time. All I said was, she said, was this set for today? And I said, yes, it was, Your Honor. And that goes back to the original hearing, Your Honor, when we started this, when they first brought this, and it was on the first day of the hearing, because, Your Honor, On August 21st, I filed with the court a memorandum in response to Della's local rule position statement. Her position statement that she filed on August 7th of 2023 was the first time that she even mentioned imputing income. There's never a pleading on there that she was going to impute income at any time. Nothing regarding imputing income. What she had done, she had said that I'd filed a motion to continue in July, and she put it in her that she was going to pursue additional child support for the years 2017 through 2022. Okay. But she never said
so she would have the right to do under the MSA you just cited.
But that's what she says, and Your Honor, and the court listed what was pending, and I said, and the court listing of the petitions, the only pending plea regarding Shrupp was filed on August 17th, 2017. President Dell's counsel drew the court's attention to paragraph 3.3B, you know, and of the MSA, and said, this is what she intended to read. If wife desires to recalculate and present to the court the calculations of Shrupp, husband agrees to cooperate. She went on to argue, there is no requirement that each individual year be put in some sort of pleading when the marriage settlement agreement and judgment of dissolution of marriage in this case indicates such. Your Honor, 3.3B reads, husband agrees that in the event wife and counsel desire to recalculate the provision for payment of child support as indicated above, prior to the entry of the formal judgment of dissolution of marriage on June 1st, 2020, or 2013, husband agrees to cooperate. She misread that to the court. And that's why she didn't file an amended pleading when I objected. Because she misled us. That was what she was relying on, was her interpretation of 3.3B, because the contract itself does not provide for that. And then the judge, based upon her arguments, allowed her to go forward.
Another question.
Yes, sir.
The April 4th, 2024 order concerns the amount of credit that you were to receive each year for Social Security derivative benefits that were paid to the mother. And that order says that was per stipulation. Was there a stipulation?
What stipulation?
What's that?
I don't know of any stipulation, or what?
Well, that's, you agree that's what the order says?
If that's what the order says, what I put forth was what I, you know, and all I was saying is that in this time I had paid and this amount. I did not agree to go forward on imputation. There was no plea to impute income to me. Nothing. Nothing put me on notice prior to hearing or during, you know, except when we got into the hearing. All I was doing was saying, Your Honor, this is what I paid. What I paid. Here's what I paid. Yeah.
Well, that's all going to be a matter of record, so.
Yes, sir. But even if I stipulate that that's what I paid, that's right, I paid that, I'll admit that. But that's what I paid. And in fact, it's my position that if that there has to be a pleading to impute income to me, and I said it to the court that I believe it was the Zdzisky case? I'm sorry. Yeah. Remarriage of Zukowski. Issue failed to plead an increase in child support and reverse the trial court's increase in filed child support. Held that the trial court's authority is limited to the relief sought in the pleadings. There were no pleadings to this effect. Even if she says, well, okay, we're going to go, I want to do an update on the, without any pleadings, 17 through 22, What's the theory? How are they going to put me on, they have to put me on notice as to how they're pursuing this. What's their cause? They said I should have filed a motion to dismiss. They never filed a motion to that effect. How can I file a motion to dismiss if there's no petition on file? And they have the right throughout to amend. Even after judgment is entered, they could have amended. They could have, you know, they waited until after discovery had closed, and then they would have come forward and supplied me a trial, forced me to try this by the seat of my pants without discovery, without having an opportunity to prepare my witnesses. How is that equitable? I mean, that's why we have the rules, Your Honor, for pleading. Because I'll stipulate that I paid X amount of dollars during those years. I have no problem stipulating that. But I do have a problem stipulating that they have the right to go forward on imputation of income without giving me an opportunity to prepare. And that's why we have rules. You know, the petitioners seem to rely on Soledecki. And, Your Honor, I'll just bring that forward. And in Soledecki, the father, who was the responsible for child support, Your Honor, filed for true-up calculations. He filed. He then filed for the years, I think, 2015, 2016, 2017. Then he filed another count for 2018 and asked for a modification. He filed. The wife filed a responsive pleading. So in that case, we have pleadings so that the parties could be attuned as to what we're going forward on. They could prepare. And what the father objected to in that case was, he says, well, I'm the one who filed the petition for true-up. And the court actually, the trial court, granted his petitions, and she appealed. And at the appellate court, he argued, well, she didn't file a motion for true-up. The appellate court, looked at him and said, you did. You filed the petitions. And based upon your petitions, we can go forward. In this case, there's nothing. And I objected before we started the hearing. I objected in closing argument, and I have objected before this court. And I've continued to object. You know, when you're talking about imputing it to me, I did a calculation, it was over $500,000. To my income over 5 years. When I was on Social Security, the issue as to whether or not the child court abuses discretion allowing Dell to go forward again with pleadings, you know, on the petition for attorney's fees, you know, she filed 3 pleadings on that one. And then when I raised that objection at the trial court, and I went to the trial court, she filed 3, and the trial court gave her option of which one she was going to go forward on. I had filed a verified answer to her amended pleading, setting the issue, the parties, you know, basically my response to the pleading was based upon the holding in Ray Meredith Schneider, where the Supreme Court said the party seeking an award of attorney's fees must establish her inability to pay, and the other spouse's ability to do so. Financial inability exists where the requiring payment of fees would strip that party of her means of support or undermine her financial ability. Basically, and I pled that I was on Social Security and had a limited income, and my former wife, at the age of 55, was retired. She had hundreds of thousands of dollars in income, or in investments. She owned a house. She owned all of these different assets. And when I went to, we went to trial, the court said, no, I'm sorry, I'm limited. I can't. I was limited in my cross-examination in 2016. Wait a second, we're here in 2023. So the issue is what we could do then. And the court didn't even, did not even consider what I was saying. The court gave her the option for proceeding on whichever petition she wanted. I'm out of time. May I continue, Your Honors, or it's up to you?
You can finish a brief summary.
You're asking an attorney to be brief? Thank you, Your Honor. There are multiple issues that I've raised in my pleadings, Your Honor, or in my brief, which I'll allow the court, which I believe the court will address. I think the most important issue is that first issue, is whether or not I have the right under the contract to self-determination. Because that is the issue. The court is, in order for them to go forward, Your Honor, they would have to plead a modification to the contract because there's nothing in the contract that says I cannot retire. I cannot take, at the age of 62, take retirement and provide for my child support obligation through my Social Security benefits, which is what I did. I didn't provide this $15,000. I showed the court not only did I provide the $15,000, but I supplied more than the 28% of my income each year. I have fulfilled the terms of the contract. And what they're wanting to do is go beyond the contract. And you can't do that unless you plead it and put me on notice that that's what we're doing and give me the opportunity to defend them, to file a motion to dismiss. Because if they filed that in 2023, motions to modify are only retroactive, are only effective from the date they're filed.
All right, you've gone beyond a brief summary.
All right, thank you, Your Honor.
Appellee, you may proceed. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Your Honor. Honors, may it please the court and counsel. I'm Rebecca Reinhart here on behalf of the appellee, Della Field. This case is about a father who will take extreme measures to evade his child support obligation. The parties' marriage settlement agreement is clear. Mr. Field was to pay 28% of his net income each year to Ms. Field in the form of child support. At the time that the marriage settlement agreement was entered into and ultimately incorporated into the parties' dissolution judgment, Mr. Field was a partner in a law firm and his income fluctuated. Because his income fluctuated and to ensure that Ms. Field would receive regular child support payments, the agreement was $1,300 a month. And in March of the following year, there would be a true-up to make sure that she was receiving 20% of his net income. The statutory child support in 2013 when the MSA or the marriage settlement agreement was entered into and which is what governs this case, was 28%. The marriage settlement agreement itself actually includes the statutory language for net income. It incorporates the Illinois Marriage and Dissolution of Marriage Act as it existed at that time in 2013. Wherein a court cannot ascertain an individual's income or wherein an individual reduces his income, imputed income can be utilized, and that's well defined in the Illinois Marriage and Dissolution of Marriage Act. In August of 2017, Ms. Field was forced to file a motion for additional child support or a true-up of what that 28% net of his income would be. After years of continuances, delays...
Can you explain to the court what a true-up is?
I guess what I see routinely in my family law practices is even in situations like this where an individual's income can't be easily ascertained going forward, the marriage settlement agreement or child support agreement will specify a certain amount each month, and then at a later date, if the parties can't agree what the actual income was for the preceding year, the trial court would have a hearing to determine the actual income and net income for the preceding year. So, for example, if the hearing had taken place in 2017, it would have just been for 2016, and whatever the annual child support obligation was, he would have been given credit for the $1,300 a month that he paid. That was the intent. That's clear in the language of the party's marriage settlement agreement. It's done frequently when individuals have income that fluctuates, as Mr. Field would have as he was a personal injury attorney.
Okay, I asked him two questions.
Sure.
One was about his argument about the fact that the years 2017 through 2022 were not properly included in the pleadings. And I asked whether that was before the court because of the fact that the parties had agreed. He, of course, you heard him take the position that he did. What is your position about that?
Your Honor, I believe that he stipulated on the record, actually two times, and I can direct the court's attention to where it is on the in the report of the proceedings below, page 599 of volume 6 of the report and of proceedings, and page 606 to 607 of volume 6. The trial court judge asked Mr. Field on two different occasions, to which he affirmatively agreed that 2016 up to through and including December 31st of 2022 would be included. So he agreed on the record that those were the years at issue. I also pointed out in Appellee's brief that his continuance request, his child support calculations, and his position statements all dealt with the years in question. It's clear when one looks at the record of the proceedings in this case and what the trial court asked Mr. Field to file, that he was fully aware of what was pending before the court. And I would also draw the court's attention to the fact that the motion for true-up or the motion for additional child support technically isn't a pleading. It's a motion in a pending case, almost akin to a motion to enforce the marriage settlement agreement. She was asking the court to calculate Mr. Field's income or net income for child support purposes for the years in question because the parties couldn't agree to what that was. So it wasn't a request for relief akin to a petition for dissolution. A petition for modification would be a pleading. But a motion to enforce, which is really what this is not a pleading subject to the pleading requirements under the Code of Civil Procedure. All that was required was notice and the ability for Mr. Field to participate for due process to be complied with, and that was done by his own admittance in the record.
Okay, my other question had to do with the April 4th, 2024 order and the amount of credit that he received as it pertained to the Social Security derivative benefits.
Yes, Your Honor.
Was that a stipulation?
There was
asking the same question.
There was a stipulation on the record that the direct derivative benefit that Ms. Field received as an alternate payee on behalf of the children was indeed credited back to him by stipulation. The issue, and I do want to make clear to this court, and I was mistaken in the brief, but the record and Ms. Field's testimony makes this clear. The child in care benefit is what I think Mr. Field is disputing. I had indicated in Appellee's brief that that was derived from her earnings. It was not. That was a mistake of fact on my part. It was a child in credit that she, child in care credit benefit through Social Security that she receives as a divorced spouse of Mr. Field. When she applied for that, she initially thought, and she testified to, that she would be receiving more because she had retired at that point and she was entitled to draw on his Social Security. But it's treated differently than a derivative benefit. It is, she is the payee, not the children, and it's based on her income, and she actually pays income tax on that. I did do substantial research to try to find Illinois case law that dealt directly with the child in care benefit. The N. Ray Henry case that's cited in the briefs deals with the direct derivative benefit that Mr. Field did get credit for. But the record is clear that this was Ms. Field's Social Security that she received because she was a former spouse with dependent children in her household. So I don't believe that the trial court abused its discretion when it didn't credit.
Are the children still minors?
Currently, yes. one is not a minor, and there's currently one minor child. But for the time in question, both children were still minor children. The second issue that Mr. Field has brought to this court's attention is whether or not he was prejudiced by the trial court proceeding on one of three nearly identical motions for attorney's fees for an unfavorable appeal previously filed in this case. The trial court questioned the parties as to what was pending. I did identify and direct the trial court during the proceedings that there were inadvertently three nearly identical motions for fees that were filed. I did indicate, and it's in the record, that I had left the firm. I think there was some confusion and duplicate motions for attorney fees were filed. I repeatedly stated at the trial court it didn't matter which one we proceeded on. I left that at the trial court's discretion. While Mr. Field argues that somehow that was an abuse of discretion for the court to proceed on the actual motion that it did, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. The facts and the issues on all three of those motions were identical. Mr. Field had the opportunity to be heard, and he participated in that proceeding in the lower court. The third issue that Mr. Field raises is res judicata as to the sanctions for filing a false financial affidavit. Res judicata is an affirmative defense which must be raised at the time of trial where it was waived. The record's clear on this one as well. Mr. Field agreed and stipulated that the motion for filing a false affidavit was pending. He participated. It wasn't until he filed his appeal did he raise the issue of res judicata. That affirmative defense has been waived. The fifth issue raised by Mr. Field is whether or not the trial court abused its discretion when it included travel allowances and a profit-sharing contribution by his employer to his net income for 2016. In calendar year 2016, Mr. Field was still employed as a partner at Strellis and Field. At no point did Mr. Field provide any evidence that the travel allowance was anything other than an annual flat fee of $13,500 that he was paid. He presented no evidence that that was actual mileage reimbursement at the IRS rate or that they paid for maintenance or upkeep on the vehicle. It was nothing more than his travel to and from his home into the office. Therefore, the court didn't abuse its discretion when it included those travel allowances in its income because he didn't meet burden to prove that it was an expense that he incurred in the furtherance of his income. The other issue.
What is your standard of review on that issue?
The standard of review would be abuse of discretion standard. Same applies to the profit sharing. The Illinois Marriage and Dissolution of Marriage Act of 2013 that governs the parties' marriage settlement agreement in this case defined net income as income from all sources minus certain deductions. One of the deductions that would have been allowed is mandatory retirement contributions. There was no evidence presented to the trial court whatsoever that the profit sharing was a mandatory retirement contribution of the firm. To the contrary, it was just what it was entitled, a profit-sharing plan that was paid into by the firm on behalf of Mr. Field due to sharing profits that the firm generated. It was never deducted from his income, nor was it a mandatory deduction for it to have been excluded from his net income calculations for 2016. Therefore, the trial court didn't abuse its discretion when it included those profit-sharing amounts in his income. The sixth issue that Mr. Field raises is that of the statutory interest. Interest on child support is mandatory, and child support orders are considered reoccurring. Case law is very clear on that. Mr. Field's interpretation would require a new order each and every year to be entered. That's not required pursuant to the terms of the marriage settlement agreement. The marriage settlement agreement set his child support at 28% of his net, $1,300 a month, which he would be given credit for upon a true-up or a calculation in March of the subsequent year, and then he was to pay the difference. The interest started accumulating, according to the statute under the trial court's order, in April of the subsequent year. Furthermore, the marriage settlement agreement is, though it is a contract, is still bound by the public policy of Illinois. It would be a violation of public policy to waive the child support obligation or the interest on that child support obligation, because the child support is a right of the children. The children have the right to receive the child support from their father. And then the last issue, and I think the most important issue, is the imputation of Mr. Field's income. The marriage settlement agreement was a statutory 28%, wherein a court cannot ascertain the income or an individual voluntarily reduces his or her income, the court may impute an earning capacity. This is routinely done. The record is clear that Mr. Field walked away from significant income. He admitted that he did. He walked away from equity in a firm, reduced his income from making well over $100,000 a year to making $16,800 annually, well below the minimum wage, after being an equity partner in a personal injury firm. He funneled personal expenses through his solo practice and refused to provide information ordered to be provided by the court. Therefore, the trial court absolutely, in its discretion, could assign an earning capacity to him for the years in question, and we would ask that this court affirm the trial court's decision.
No other questions.
If I'm remembering correctly, I think Mr. Field's argument was that this imputation issue was not pled, so therefore he kind of ambushed with it, if I'm putting words in his mouth, but that's how I took that. So was that a pled in anything, or was that included in any pleading?
It was not included in the motion, but the court at its discretion can always do that. This is, once again, not a pleading to modify, a petition to modify. It was a motion. Mr. Field had to have been on notice, especially as an attorney, that the court can impute an earning capacity to him at any point in time. There were repeated discovery violations. I think stretching back to 2017, the initial hearing had to be continued because Mr. Field did not comply with discovery orders, wherein the court can't, I believe the court could have sua sponte entered an earning capacity assessment to Mr. Field when the court couldn't ascertain his earnings. And I think the record is clear that no one knew what his income was because he was so evasive. At one point he states that he didn't walk away from anything, and then he admits that he did walk away from retained earnings that were due and owing to him in the firm because they were ill-gotten gains, whatever that means, without much further explanation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. First, regarding your stipulation, Your Honor, that was correct. We stipulated as to what additional child support, or not child, family benefit Della received into her personal account. That's what we stipulated to. What she had done was a family benefit, and she did, it started out, it was split between the two children, and then in 2021, after we decided that we were going to split custody of our son, she applied for the part of the family benefit, and instead of splitting the benefit two ways between the children, she had the benefit split three ways, giving her one-third of that family benefit. And that's what I was saying. It was based on my income, and I was entitled to that. And that was a stipulation, Your Honor, as to what she had received during that time period. Okay. Now, with regard to retirement, Your Honor, that was always on my W-2s. Always stated as a retirement. That was the, you know, was not included as income to me, to the IRS. And it was on all my, and on all my financial statements, I put down that that was a retirement account. It was never mentioned any other way. I said specifically it was a retirement account. And the W-2s backed me up on that, that that was never considered, it was a retirement account. The interest by statute is when it is due. And my position is, when the court determined, we're talking about additional child support. We're not talking about back child support. We're talking about additional child support. When the court determines when it's due, she had the right to come in at any time, that's when interest applies. Otherwise, if I dispute how much is owed, then I'm penalized by interest. If I have a legitimate concern, position, no. The statute says when it's due. It said, I walked away from equity. No, Your Honor, it's in this, the record. I was paid for the equity. In fact, out of my payment for the equity, Dell received over $54,000. She had received, you know, I was paid for the equity. Retained earnings, they keep pointing to that. There were retained earnings in 2014. We're not talking about 2023 when the court's asking me about retained earnings. Or even in 2017, and it doesn't take into consideration what I was paid in 2015, 2016. Because what was it an issue, if they wanted to raise the issue, what was the retained earnings in 2017? It's not in the record. There's nothing, you know, in the record regarding my retained earnings, if there are any. They raised the issue as to what I said as to ill-gotten gains. They said you didn't turn in your partner. And I just point out to the court, in all relationships, Your Honor, legally, there's a client and there's an attorney. And I deposed many doctors, and I asked the doctors in evidence depositions, I said, doctor, can you give me, do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of medical certainty whether or not the accident as your client described, or as your patient described it, was a cause of the injuries you treated him for? And the answer would be yes. And of course, the next question would always be, and you have to rely on the truth and veracity of your client. Is that correct? That's correct. And that's how I would answer that, Your Honor. It was my partner and I did nothing wrong. I don't have to turn him in and even know of anything. They keep talking about repeated discovering violations. In 10 years, there were two motions to compel the issues. Both of them on our IOLTA accounts. We objected to turning over our IOLTA accounts. I was at an office that I was associated with in Chicago. They subpoenaed those records in an office I don't work at, on cases I don't work on, I never worked on, yet they subpoenaed, and the young man who worked up there in our firm objected. My partner objected. So what are we doing in Chicago? And the trial court, and we filed a motion to quash. Court said, you got to turn them over. That was their motion to compel. on me. There was one motion to compel. Same issue. The trial court said she subpoenaed my IOLTA accounts. She didn't ask for them in discovery. She subpoenaed them. And I filed a motion to quash. Gentlemen, I can't turn those over without a court order. That's my position. And those are client confidential information. How can I turn that over without having you? The proper way for it to do is for me to turn it over to the trial court, the trial court review it, and then determine.
All right, counsel. Thank you, Your Honor. I'll give you time to briefly sum up.
Well, briefly, Your Honor. Interesting. What I was dealing with, Your Honors, in 2017, I had to make a determination. None of us live forever. And as I put in my brief and I told the trial court, I asked him, have you ever been taken out of your office on a stretcher? For the hospital, you know. That happened to me in July of 2017. And that's when I made the final determination to sell my equity, my partnership. I had a heart condition. I've been treated for thyroid cancer. I was sitting going, none of us live forever. When we got into this case and for the hearing, prior to August 7th, no one had said anything about imputing income. Not a word. Nothing.
All right. That's it.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, everybody. We will take this matter under advisement and issue a ruling in due course.